The following podcast may contain spoilers.
We turn to the Binge Lords of Twitter for our second listener lockdown choice poll. Maybe you live in a country that's out of lockdown, but since we live in a failed state, we're still in lockdown. So we turn to you, our binge lords, on Twitter, at Pat and Jason, to tell us what movie you wanted me to review. I'm Jason, one of the co-hosts of Binge Movies. Pat's not here. He's going to be in cryo sleep until 2032. This week, I am joined by a special guest, our illustrious producer, the Reverend, the Right Reverend, Combat Jones. How are you, Combat Jones?
I am fantastic.
Great. So we turned to Twitter and we asked our binge lords, we asked you, the people, to vote between Extraction, Chef, Honey Boy, or Demolition Man. Coming in with nearly 50 votes, we had a runaway, just landslide victory. Honey Boy comes in last, 13%. Chef and Extraction are tied at 18%, which means today's mini review, our listener choice review, is 1993's Demolition Man.
He's a cop from the 90s who just woke up in the 21st century.
Not many people get a second chance, John Spartan.
She's his new partner.
What I wouldn't do for some action.
With all the right moves.
I'm impressed.
And all the wrong phrases.
You take this job, you can shovel it.
Close enough.
Sylvester Stallone. Wesley Snipes. Demolition Man. Rated R. Starts Friday, October 8th at a theater near you.
Demolition Man came out in 1993. It currently has a 59% on Rotten Tomatoes. It was directed by Marco Brambilla. This is his only feature film directorial debut and the only one he ever did. The only other thing that he's done is Kanye West, Power, the video for his song Power. Mm. He does typically video collages. He's does like art installations and stuff like that. And okay. Like he's done some music videos. We have a screenplay here by Daniel Waters, Robert Renault, and Peter M. Lenkov, with a story by Peter M. Lenkov and Robert Renault. It stars Sylvester Stallone, which means this is the triumphant return of Sylvester Stallone, not seen since the days of Cliffhanger. 1993, I think, I want to say. Yeah. Top movies, yeah. 93. One of those episodes. We got Wesley Snipes making his debut on the show, I think. And we have the triumphant return of Sandra Bullock, not seen since the days of Speed. Give me what I need. Yeah. And we have Nigel Hawthorne, who plays Cocteau, amongst some other people. We'll get into them in a second. This film was released in the United States October 8th, 1993, which is sort of odd. You would feel like it would be a summer release.
Yeah.
It was not. And on a budget of between $45 and $77 million, it only made $159 million at the worldwide box office. Was not a big hit. I know you might not have one, but I have a one-sentence plot synopsis. I'm going to give the people what they crave, a little bit of the old-school binge movies flavor. A super cop is thawed out from suspended animation to stop his 90s psycho killer arch rival in the gluten-free future of 2032. Our protagonists are John Spartan, played by Sylvester Stallone. This was originally supposed to be Jean-Claude Van Damme or Steven Seagal. I can't imagine either one of those guys. And in the role, maybe Van Damme, Van Damme. We have Linnea Huxley, who's played by Sandra Bullock. Her name is a play on Huxley, who wrote A Brave New World, the main character about a dystopian future. The protagonist was named Linnea. So they kind of mixed the author and the main character from A Brave New World. This was originally supposed to be Lori Petty of Tank Girl fame, which we will eventually cover on a future episode of Binge Movies.
Oh, God.
We get Benjamin Bratt as Bratwurst, as Alfredo Garcia. And our antagonist, we've got Wesley Snipes as Simon Phoenix, who is at his all-time best 90s martial arts overacting, just going to town.
Oh, yeah. Way over the top.
Way over the top. Complete cartoon villain. This was originally supposed to be Jackie Chan.
No way.
But he didn't want to be a villain. This was supposed to be one of his big American debut movies.
That would have been a bad choice.
I mean, Jean-Claude Van Damme versus John Spartan versus Jackie Chan as Simon Phoenix.
Yeah, that'd been horrible. What would he have been called?
Simon Phoenix.
They were named Jackie Chan, Simon Phoenix.
Jackie Phoenix?
Jackie Phoenix? Yeah.
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 Senior Chang?
Senior Chang. Yeah, Senior Chang Phoenix. Yeah.
I have Changnesia in the future. We have Raymond Cocteau. He's another one of our antagonists. Nigel Hawthorne is deliciously condescending. He reminds me of a neoliberal self-help pope.
Mm.
Kind of has a John Paul II kind of vibe to him.
Yeah.
And we have Chief George Earl, played by Bob Gunton. Most people would know him from Shawshank Redemption. He played the warden. He's one of the all-time great film assholes. I know him from a movie I don't even remember the name of, where he ends up becoming a meat puppet. At the end of the movie, they do a Saw-style reveal, and it turns out he wasn't in a wheelchair. He was been hollowed out by his wife, who was another puppet, and she's got a stick. Dead silence, something like that. It's a bit of possessed ventriloquist dummies. That's how I know him. Some people have Shawshank Redemption. I got meat puppet Bob.
One for the other. Oh, only thing I could see when I was watching him was he looked like an angry Paul Schaefer.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
From David Letterman.
I think it's the glasses.
It was. Yeah, it was the glasses and the bald head.
Yeah, we got side characters. We've got Associate Bob, who's played by the late, great Glenn Shaddix, who most people know from Beetlejuice, the Ortho or something like
Theo.
Theo? Yeah, okay. And Edgar Friendly, played by Dennis Leary, who is completely unnecessary to the film.
Yes, yeah.
Dennis Leary, if you were not alive in the 90s, was on a hot streak right about this time. There's another character. Rob Schneider is also in this movie doing his SNL shtick of the copy guy or making copies. those two guys were on a hot streak comedically on television and stand up for Dennis Leary before everybody figured out he was just stealing his jokes from other comedians, right? And really wasn't writing his own material. How do you feel Dennis Leary does in this movie, and could we have just gotten rid of the character? Obviously, the whole plot is they're trying to kill this.
Yeah,
Edgar Friendly scrapper guy, but does it need to be a comedian?
I don't think it needs to be a comedian. I think the character needs to exist, but I think you could have gotten away with like a Christian Slater at the time.
I don't know. That's almost worse. I am not a Christian Slater.
I'm not either. But if you're thinking about that kind of guy that was being hot, being that kind of could be the rebel that everybody gets behind.
Motormouth.
Yeah, I could see him filling in that role.
Right.
Or someone like that. Someone who was just kind of on the rise because they wouldn't take a starring role. Like, it's not really a starring role. It's a crucial, like, position in the movie because that's, you know, why he's woken up. That's the aid that John Spartan gets. We need that character. But I didn't know I don't think it needed to be comedic.
No, but they want to do that Dennis Leary rant, which he was famous for. He's talking about all of these things that somebody who was born theoretically after those things didn't exist, like greasy diners, cigars, and Playboy. I would assume that doesn't exist in this world. How does he know about
them? Yeah, it's like the one song he had. I'm an asshole. It's like he just kind of pretty much did that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he had a shtick, and they were like, do that shtick, just like Rob Schneider. Do that shtick in this movie.
Yes.
I don't think it necessarily detracts because he's not in it a ton.
Yeah.
But when he's on the screen, I'm like, this was a very 1992, 93 choice. And now in 2020, Dennis, it just stands out as very 90s.
Yes.
And there's a lot about this movie that's very 90s. And some of it is enjoyable 90s schlock. And some of it, like Dennis Leary, is just dated 90s schlock.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Cause I think Dennis Leary is dated 90s schlock.
Because nowadays, I think you'd have someone that could add a little bit of complexity to the character.
Oh, yeah, yeah. This whole movie would be at least attempting. It would have a faux grittiness to it, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
It wouldn't be as tongue-in-cheek.
It wouldn't be as tongue-in-cheek. There'd be more of a political angle to it.
Yeah.
It'd have some type of major, you know, world event that'd be tied into it. Or world crisis, if there's one out there right now.
I don't know of any.
I don't know of any either.
So everything seems to be going pretty great out there.
Yep.
You know, I live in a bunker, so I don't really know what's going on in the above world, but I assume everything's great because, you know, it's been very quiet from what I can hear up there.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I just assume
everybody must be peaceful, not a lot going on.
Right.
Must be just chilling.
Must be chilling like a villain.
That's right.
This movie opens up in the future of 1996 Los Angeles. And there's no commercial airlines apparently that fly in LAX anymore.
What the hell happened in 2 years?
Yeah, like 3 years.
Yeah, it was like 90. It came out in 93, right? They say in 1995.
It was probably written in 91, 92. You had the LA riots in 92. So there was this mentality in the early 90s, if you remember, that the Los Angeles area, Watts, all those like urban neighborhoods around there, they were all going to hell in a handbasket. You had the Rodney King beating. You had movies like Boys in the Hood. You had that, the, you know, the urban legend of people getting shot for Jordans.
Yeah.
You know, that was around, and you know, all of these gang members who were taking over society in the West Coast and East Coast and were destroying New York and destroying, you know, LA. And, you know, so I think that was the idea, was like, if you could take like the late 80s, early 90s gang banger culture and the drug culture and everything, and you just exploded it out, kind of like Predator 2. Right?
Yeah.
Just imagine just rival gangs kind of taking over different territories. You know, that's.
Yeah, but the entire city.
Well, this movie is basically a conservative nightmare.
That's true.
Right? It's basically like a 90s conservative nightmare. Because the future is this utopia, but it's everybody's vegan. So.
Yeah, no salt, no actual.
Yeah. Right, yeah. There's no red meat, no salt, no contact sports, no sex, no cigars, no smoking, no drinking, no cussing.
No guns.
No guns. Right.
No real cars. Yeah.
Yeah, no violence. Everything's environmentally friendly. If you extrapolated the two things that white conservatives thought about California in the 90s, which is it's either minority gangbangers, and the Simon Phoenix character just so happens to be black.
Yeah.
So it's either minority gangbangers or it is neoliberal PC culture. So you those are the two villains of the movie. And the two guys our conservative comedian Dennis Leary, libertarian comedian Dennis Leary, right?
Yeah, because it's a libertarian nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah, nobody could tell me what to do. And this caveman who just wants to do the hunka chunka with any woman he sees and beat people up and uses guns.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the epitome of what they would probably view as
alpha male.
Alpha male. This is who you want to be. This is what you want to do.
Right.
And then the woman who just admires everything about it.
Yeah. Yeah, right. There's very little agency.
Yeah.
Other than just to think everything was great. Everything was better in the 90s for middle-aged white guys.
Yeah. Knows every single thing about that culture, but can't get, like, the keywords of catchphrases. Makes no sense.
It does open up with an amazing helicopter stunt where I don't know if there's an actor who's made a or had a bigger career. Just screaming the names of his rivals.
I thought the exact same thing. Yeah.
Ever since, like, Creed,
Drago,
Phoenix. Yeah, like, this guy, no one has ever had a more successful career where at least a fourth of his dialogue was just screaming the villain's name.
Not even the villain. What's his most famous line?
Oh, Adrian.
Adrian. Yeah, just yelling people's names.
Just yelling names. Yeah.
Adrian.
Yeah. We get the as this happens though, the stunt's amazing, but the score kicked in and I was getting some serious Batman vibes off of the music, in particular Batman Forever. And lo and behold, I used the Google machine, and the guy who did this score in 93 would go on to do the score replacing Danny Elfman for Batman Forever. And I'm like, he used the same music cues in Batman Forever as he does in Demolition Man.
Probably the only one who memorized the music cues of Batman Forever.
Or Demolition Man.
Demolition Man has some nostalgia for me, at least, and for other people. Batman Forever, I kind of want to just... That's one of those movies you want to kind of wipe out of your mind and try to forget as much as possible.
I've already covered it once many years ago with Pat, and we're going to be covering it again if we ever get Pat back out of cryostasis. From when we cover the top films of 95, because I think it was the top grossing film. So we're going to be covered again years later and doing a Redux review. But I was getting like Batman and Joker vibes. There's definitely, he's channeling some Joker something.
Yes.
That chaos, that gasoline, cigarette, I'm holding people hostage. Are they dead or alive?
Yeah, that making a plan and a trap based on you caring about lives and me not. I'm just looking for chaos.
Yes.
His way of dealing with his rival was to get himself caught.
Yeah.
Because it would get him caught as well.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's definitely like a mirror image of the two characters that goes on through the entire movie.
Yeah. And even just some of the choreography of some of the action scenes, which we'll get into here in a little bit, I feel like Joel Schumacher saw this movie in 93 and they pitched him Batman and he was like, I want it to feel like Demolition Man. Some of the production design, some of the obviously the score, he went out and got the same composer.
Yeah.
Or Warner Brothers saw this movie and was like, we want it to be that movie that flopped 2 years ago. You know, but it just like even some of the camera angles, it didn't have as many Dutch angles, but it had some of the same sweeping shots and crane some of the same shots. I swear to God. It's not the same cinematographer, but somebody looked at the visualization and the shot composition of this movie and was like, that is the epitome of what a Batman movie, like even like the villains with the Mad Max style Tupac, California love.
California love.
Yeah, like outfits or whatever, zooming around. I mean, like you think about like Sylvester Stallone just standing there, like beating guys up on motorcycles as they ride around him. It was just very Batman-esque.
Yeah, exactly. It looked like he's in the middle of Road Rash. Remember that game?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah. We get a Chekhov's quip here when Simon Phoenix says, I swear, I'd lose my head if it wasn't attached. That's going to come back later on. This movie, it is incredibly impressive in its practical effects because not only does a stunt guy jump out of a plane on a bungee cord, which is very 90s, to land on the roof, but then they just legitimately demo a giant old ass factory with a thermonuclear explosion is the only thing I could say. Like they had to detonate a small A-bomb to blow that building up.
Yeah. And what I thought interesting about that scene is he sets fire to the floor in the opening scene.
Set up.
Because there's a lot of setups in like the first opening scene that we'll get into later, but it's something to keep in mind.
Yeah, the beginning mirrors the ending.
Yeah,
whatever,
you have fire and ice. It's almost like it's communicating that these two are opposites.
Yeah, and you even have, you have the Phoenix, right?
Yeah.
And they always refer to him as the caveman.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah.
Yeah.
He rises from the ashes and, you know, he's a thought out caveman who's coming out of ice or whatever.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They tried.
Yeah, you can see what they were attempting at least.
Yeah, yeah. It's not necessarily sophisticated, but there's some kind of an attempt.
Yeah.
Yeah. How exactly do Spartan, because he's carrying Phoenix on his shoulders like a sandbag, how do they, like literally we see them running through the flames and the next shot is the entire building getting nuked. How the hell did they get out of that building? He's about to jump out of a window with a 220-pound jacked what's his face,
Simon Phoenix, Wesley Snipes.
Yeah, how are they getting out of the blast radius of this explosion?
Maybe they're near an emergency exit.
We see them about to go through a window
and
then it just magically cuts to this giant explosion and then the entire building collapses in on itself.
Maybe it was on like a really big delay. I don't know.
They didn't have any time to get out of there.
It didn't make sense.
No. But it's a very impressive stunt.
Yes.
Because they just really turbo nuked a building.
Yeah. It looked good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
70-year sentence is what Spartan gets for killing 30 hostages. How many? That's 70. So that's less than 2 years. Well, that's a little more than 2 years per life? Or is he serving multiple sentences consecutively?
I don't know. Is it 70 per life or is it 70 total?
70 total.
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, you're looking at a judicial system.
It's about 2 years per life, give or take, with a little bit added on.
You're looking at a judicial system that pretty much just puts your life on pause and has you learn things as you're in this sleep mode.
Right.
Right.
It reprograms you. Yeah.
Reprograms you. Yeah. So, I mean, typically, I think that would lends itself more to smaller crimes, like you accidentally killed somebody with your car.
The charges they brought him was involuntary manslaughter because he didn't actually kill them.
Yeah, so
he was just
murder.
Negligent. Yeah, it wasn't murder.
Yeah.
But my question is, if you could just reprogram somebody, right? Why give them 70 years?
Yeah.
Right? Why not just give them the length of however it takes to reprogram them?
Maybe the punishment is they lose everyone they love. So you're starting fresh. You have to start a new life. Because if not, what's the punishment? You learn something and you're younger in the future. That could be seen as a benefit.
Oh,
because you're not losing any, evidently they don't age, so they're not losing any bit of their life.
Right. So your debt to society is losing the world that you knew.
Yep. And everything you loved.
You have to start from zero.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense. The movie didn't really spell that out, but I guess it kind of makes sense. So we do. We fast forward to 2032, from 1996 to 2032. And the guy says, things don't happen anymore. We've taken care of all that. We get our introduction to Sandra Bullock's character. This is the triumphant return not only of her, but also of her very thin 90s eyebrows. We get Bullock, who's, I think, on point as a childlike but slightly rebellious, darling cop figure.
Mm-hmm.
Fresh-faced cop who's kind of in over her head, but also can kind of hold her own. You know, she walks that fine line of being, she's not as sassy as she would be, like, in Speed, which was her breakout role, but she walks that fine line of being a goof at the same time as being...
Yeah.
Or being goofy without being a goof, I guess.
Yeah, they didn't... Yeah, because...
She's daffy.
Yeah, because they used things that were outside of what she would be expected to know to bring in the humor, bring in the goof.
Right. And she's... hungry for action in this boring utopia. Meanwhile, we get this hint that there's an underground resistance. There's some graffiti that shows up, and it says, you know, EF for Edgar Friendly, and it says life is hell, which tells us that literally underground, under the surface of this utopia, this perfect society that we're seeing in the future, things are not as they seem, because why would anybody in this perfectly peaceful, passive, beautiful California future think that life is hell? So we automatically know something's rotten. Something stinks in Denmark,
yeah,
or in San Angeles, as the case might be.
It's not as it looks.
Yep. We get a parole hearing for Simon Phoenix. Why ever even have a parole hearing?
Yeah. You killed a bunch of people.
If you're on ICE, why do we need to bring you off of ICE?
What are they interview for?
Yeah, what's the interview? And then we're going to put you, because the plan was to put him back on ICE, but obviously there's, you know, subterfuge afoot or whatever.
Yeah.
What I don't understand, if you're in cryostasis, we don't need to interview you.
The parole system as you know it was rendered obsolete.
Rendered obsoleto.
Federal statute 537-29. Stop it! Do you have anything fresh to say on your behalf? I thought not.
Yeah, I do. Teddy bear.
We're reprogramming your brain. What the fuck is the interview?
Yeah, the only way it would make sense is to see how the experiment was going.
Yeah, that would be more of a test of...
Yeah, it
would
be...
We're teaching you knitting like they do with Stallone.
Yeah.
Can you knit?
What? Yeah, why wasn't that, like, yeah.
Are you more passive?
What was your experience like? How much pain were you in? What do you remember? What do you, how did, you know, those types of
What do
of
you
questions.
Want to do now with your life?
Yeah, yeah, what do you, what's your first instinct now? What right. is your, you know, X, Y, Z? And if they can put stuff in, why can't they take stuff out and read it from, that didn't make sense.
Yeah, why couldn't they just monitor his brain from inside?
Yeah.
Be like, yeah, he's, you know, 20% converted to being a passive citizen or whatever.
Yeah.
So he needs X amount more time.
Yeah, because if it's
he's resisting the reprogramming, so.
Bingo. Because if they can put stuff in, they can take stuff out.
Right.
Right, if you teach someone to knit, teach someone languages, if you can teach them all.
To be a hacker and martial arts. And,
exactly.
Right, muscle
then,
memory. And,
then you could probably extract information if you can put information in.
Yeah, you know, they even talk about how Phoenix is now 3 times stronger than he was when he went in. Because you see him at certain points when he's in this first conflict with the cops. He's just like literally picking some of them up and chucking them.
Yeah, I don't know how that makes sense.
So they would have had to have enhanced his strength and physiology while he was in there as well.
Yeah, I don't know how that makes sense. Because they're just reprogramming the brain.
And how does the warden or how do the scientists who are watching him not notice that he's somebody's injecting him with cryosteroids or whatever? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah.
The warden doesn't have access to the rehabilitation program, but a cop, beat cop, does.
That doesn't make sense.
No.
Or unless the only argument I could see is that they're not used to anything being afoot. They're not used to any kind of criminal activity. So
or anything underhanded.
Or anything underhanded.
So they don't even look.
So they don't even look because there's no alarm bells.
They're that passive. That kind of makes sense. I could maybe get with that. He does, of course, escape. Phoenix has been implanted with memories and new skills, including the password for his cuff, Teddy Bear. He commits the first murder that San Angeles has seen in decades. They call it a murder-death-kill, MDK. Now, do you remember the 1997 third-person shooter for PlayStation called MDK? I owned it. I remember nothing about that game other than I hated it.
I was a 64 guy.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Phoenix is at this point full-blown Batman villain, including having a gimmick, which is he says, Simon says whatever for about two thirds of the movie. And then in the last third, I don't think he says it anymore. If I'm not mistaken, it just kind of disappears from the.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I remember,
I felt like it was a part of an earlier version of the script. And then it just like, didn't, this they did have some rewrites.
This doesn't work. We looked at the underground scene, the earthquake scene. We need to,
yeah, this doesn't work.
No.
Because he does the Simon Says thing, and then the catchphrase they give Stallone is "Skip it." I'm just like, that's a terrible catchphrase. And in the 90s, it makes me think of "Skip it, skip it, do wop 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 a do wop wop or whatever."
The very best thing of all is the counter on this ball.
Skip it.
So you can get the very best score. You can get a whole lot more.
You remember that? But you don't remember MDK?
Yeah.
Okay. We have the resurrection of John Spartan. Also, you have a Phoenix versus the Spartan.
Yeah.
Get it? This, was parodied in the Austin Powers film, Lord Warm Liquid Goo Phase. Complete, yeah.
Yeah.
All the different phases. Yeah, this is definitely parodied. He's got a dead wife. Turns out she was killed in a earthquake in 2010. And a missing daughter, which there's only two scenes where she even comes up. This one, and he's like, you know, the meat puppet guy.
Yeah.
He's like, you know, you're not here for a family reunion. Enough with the Rip Van Winkle. And then there's another scene where he's like, yeah, I don't want to see her.
Why
I don't fit into this world.
Was that something they were planning on doing and then couldn't cast her?
It feels like another version of the script, right?
Why bring her up? If you're going to only do it. Cause
if the character's just like, nah.
Because why do you care that much about the wife and not care about your kid at all?
It's exactly the last connection to your wife.
Yeah. The only remaining piece you have to your past is out there, is missing.
Right.
That's a movie.
That's a movie they would make now.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Because they even did it like in Aliens. It was the same thing where Ripley ends up accidentally in stasis for 50 some years. And they're like, well, what about my daughter? And I think she had died. And he's like, well, she died because she was elderly.
Yeah.
Right. And Ripley was the same age. And so they cut that out, which is the whole like thematic theme of the movie, because that's why she's so bonded to that little girl character, because it's like a second chance to be a mother.
Yeah.
And they're like, nah, I don't have time for this 5-minute scene where she sees a picture of her dead daughter, so we're just going to get rid of it.
Yeah, if they made that movie now, I think
it'd be all about the human drama of it.
Yeah, or at least if it was a subplot, he'd care a lot more, he'd go into it, and then maybe she's down under, she's in the underground society.
Could be, or maybe he goes and he finds her, and she's elderly, and he can't handle the fact that he missed her life, and so he sees her from a distance, but he never approaches her.
He sees her, she's happy.
Or she's in a nursing home, and she's dying or some shit. Yeah, there would be a reason for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't understand the point of bringing it up. Maybe there was deleted scenes. Maybe it was a part of
something.
A different version of the script.
Yeah, there had to be something that they just kind of were like, we don't have time for this, or the screeners, we don't think is going to be interesting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it feels like an unnecessary side plot.
Yeah, yeah. We're running out of people's attention because those movies were good for 90 minutes back in the 90s. They didn't run like 2 hours and 2.5 hours. So maybe they just did to save time, or they didn't think people would be interested in the daughter as much as they would be with Stallone and Bullock.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, we have to have the ubiquitous 90s romance subplot, sort of.
Yeah.
Which felt unnecessary.
It was.
Yeah. We get the future. Now, the future is almost a character in and of itself, because we have some fairly impressive, I think, production design and the dialogue, which is, to me, a real standout. I think the thing that's most memorable about this movie is the way people talk in it, like, what's your boggle, and all this sort of, like, borderline ridiculous stuff, but is said with absolute sincerity and no sarcasm by anybody.
Yeah.
You have this incredibly passive and very literal society. They don't understand sarcasm or anything like that, so they just speak very literally. Like, you know, I'm approaching the maniac. What should I do? You know, and tell the maniac to lay down or whatever. Yeah. Because everything is free of conflict, right? These people have existed in a world where there is no pollution or conflict.
Yeah.
So the manner in which they speak is like this childlike, ultra conscientious babble. It almost, like, you can understand what they mean, but it's borderline gibberish, but it's not.
It's like they're speaking in a mathematical formula.
A politically correct mathematical
yes,
formula.
This is what we should say. This is what we're programmed to say. Everything's going according to plan, including the way we talk to one another.
But what's impressive about that is you're sitting there in 93 or 2020 or whatever, even though it's like an alternative way of speaking, it's its own kind of vernacular. You understand what they mean. Saying, yeah. And that's pretty impressive.
Yeah, they did a good job with it.
And they didn't ever, to me, it's silly enough, but it's intentionally silly because the movie is a commentary against political correctness, partially. Yeah. So it wants you to be like, yeah, isn't it stupid to not be offensive?
Yeah. Isn't it offensive? Look how childlike you are. Look how
innocent and naive. Gullible. And
Yeah. These people, if you do this, these people from the future will come back and run everything.
Yeah, right. Yeah. The example, of course, is we get the verbal morality code. So every time somebody swears or says something that's potentially offensive, you have an alarm that goes off and a ticket shoots out.
Look, I don't need a history lesson. Come on, Hal! Where the goddamn guns?
You are fined 1 credit for a violation of the verbal morality statute.
What? Fuck you!
Your repeated violation of the verbal morality statute has caused me to notify the San Angeles Police Department. Please remain where you are for your reprimand.
Yeah, right.
That's one of the more famous things from the movie that's gone on to be like a meme in and of itself.
Yeah.
Which the weirdest thing about this movie is it was not very well regarded in 93. I believe I saw this in theaters with my parents. I seem to remember seeing it in theaters. And it was not the smash hit of, I mean, obviously it was, you would think it would be like a June movie. It came out in October, right? This was the tail end of Stallone's peak.
Yeah.
So this was not that big of a hit. It didn't make very much money. And I just remember it being kind of panned at the time. But yeah, for some way they've crafted enough interesting and memorable dialogue and style. And there's enough performance and there's enough production design and there's enough. It's an oddity in a way. Like it's its own kind of thing that it almost is timeless. It's so dated, it's almost timeless.
Yes, yeah.
And it's like transcended its own decade, and I feel it's almost more relevant now than it was in 93.
Exactly. And what I remember the movie is I remember a bunch of my friends talking about it at school because they would go to the theater, but we were a Blockbuster family.
Where
my dad would stop by a Blockbuster Video, pick up a couple movies on Friday night.
Yeah,
we'd watch them, and then he'd return them on his way to work on Monday or on Sunday or whatever.
Right.
So I remember hearing everyone talk, especially about the last scene.
Yeah, so the last scene was a big deal.
That was a big deal.
Right.
And I remember all my buddies talking about it, and it was one of those movies that I would always be looking at to see if it came out. Did it come out? Didn't it come out? And as soon as it came out, it was one of the ones that my vote actually won. We got to watch it like the week it came out, the Blockbuster.
And what were your thoughts in 1993? You remember?
I think I loved it. Because if you're, I was like 1993, I was 11-year-old, 12-year-old kid. I think it might have come out in 1994
probably.
For video,
somewhere
in there.
Yeah. If it was released October, it was probably spring of 94 probably.
Yeah, back in the day So I remember loving it because it had everything you wanted. It had the one scene with the video as an 11-year-old.
The boobs.
The boobs. Yeah. It had action. It had the time. It was funny.
Sandra Bullock was a cutie.
Yeah, she was a cutie. Everything was kind of relevant to my perspective with the songs and things like that.
Yeah, right.
So it really resonated because I wasn't really that big of a movie critiquer back then. I wouldn't claim to be now, but even back then, it had the fights, the explosions, the plot moves along, so it keeps your attention. So back then, I liked it a lot.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to what you think about it now.
In
2020. Probably the most famous thing to come out of this, other than the three seashells and the profanity thing, is Taco Bell.
Yes.
Now, in some countries, it's Pizza Hut, because certain countries at that time didn't have Taco Bells.
Oh.
So they did a different version of it where they were at a Pizza Hut.
So they reshot the scene and reshot the...
I don't know if they reshot it. I think they ADR'd the lines, and then they just like digitally put Pizza Hut where Taco Bell was.
And then what about what they put on the plates?
I don't know. That's an insert shot, so they might have just shot another insert shot.
Gotcha.
But I don't know. I think it was like Central South America at the time didn't have Taco Bell and parts of Europe.
Go figure.
Go figure, but they did have Pizza Hut.
Okay.
Yeah, so I don't know. You can find those cuts online, like on YouTube or whatever.
That's interesting.
I that's just off the top of my head, so that's what I see. That's what I seem to remember. If it was like Kentucky Fried Chicken, I apologize, but I'm pretty sure it was Pizza Hut.
Well, although those three companies were owned by the same...
Not in 93, I don't think.
I think they were.
I don't think they were Yum Brands.
It was like owned by PepsiCo, I think.
That might be right.
It was owned by Pepsi.
Isn't Pepsi owned by Yum?
I don't know if they were at the time, because I remember always seeing the trucks that would have the three different logos on it. Pepsi.
We get Dan Cortez of MTV fame, the whatever, Grindhouse, and I think he did the Spring Breaks or whatever. He's singing the Jolly Green Giant theme on a grand piano at Taco Bell, which may be the most 90s sentence I've ever said. And just like in the future, all restaurants are Taco Bell. In 2020, all movies are Disney.
Yeah. Not much has changed.
Not much has changed. We get a sex scene. I just put that in, you know, I'm using the air quotes. You can't see that. It's a podcast. Which is, we get Spartan. What I don't understand is, what is his resistance to having the Neuralink sex? Because if you said, right now, Jason, you could strap a helmet on your head and have weird augmented reality sex with Sandra Bullock, you wouldn't have to even get the words Sandra Bull out before I'd have that helmet on. It could end up being Sandra Bernhardt. That's a reference for the kids. The kids will get that one.
Close enough.
Yeah. Sandra, doesn't matter. Sandra Day O'Connor.
My mom's name's Sandra. But hey, she's a good looking lady. How old are we looking at, Jason?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean that.
It's okay.
What I'm just saying is, you've been in cryostasis for 36 years. You take what you can get, buddy.
Yeah.
This is your first day out, and Sandra Bullock wants to bone you digitally?
You
get bone.
Yeah, you get that digital bone. You get that eggplant.
Yes. Yes. I mean, yeah. The best we have now is what? Zoom sex?
Yeah.
That's what we got in 2020. Zoom chat
is
sex.
Is video roulette still a thing?
Chatterbait?
Yeah.
Not that I've used.
I don't know.
I don't know any specifics.
Asking for a friend.
I didn't understand what his reservation was.
Yeah. Get you some, man. You've literally been on ice for 30 years, 40 years.
Yeah.
You're not going to turn that down. You'd be a little weirded out, I think.
Yeah.
But
she probably should have done. She is smart enough to know about the 90s that people were having sex.
Yeah.
Swapping bodily fluids. So she probably should have said it destroys the gag or whatever.
Yeah.
But that character would have been like, oh, by the way, we don't touch anymore.
We don't touch anymore. We have
disease.
This thing. Yeah. And it's, you know.
It seemed to be better than actual sex.
Yeah.
And she's even like, yeah, this is like more stimulating to parts of your brain. I'm like, what is the problem?
What's the problem here?
Yeah. The reality is, if a guy from the 90s, you put a helmet on his head and he would have even more intense orgasms, you'd never take that helmet off.
I'm good.
Yeah. I'm just going to stay here for a while.
Do you have DVR yet? Could you DVR your sex in that?
Oh, probably.
Oh, yeah.
There's probably a record function.
And there's got to be like, you know, like, there had to be also some kind of bots that you could plug into that would simulate.
Oh, yeah.
Especially at that point in time.
And if you had a particularly good session, I would imagine you could replay it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
old sport, like Sports Center showing like 1994. Like weird lacrosse games right now.
Yeah. The table tennis championships of 2005.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the Ocho. I would, if I was like in high school and college, I would never left my room.
Yeah.
I'd be there all day.
If I put that helmet on in college, it'd be mostly my greatest hits of myself. There'd be a lot of other people involved.
I remember that Sunday
that spring day in 97 when Singled Out came on and Jenny McCarthy was the host.
My mom
went to the grocery store.
And I had that wet cloth right next to me.
I remember that cantaloupe very well.
Very quickly turned into lingerie and fruit salad.
Fruit salad. Go fruit salad.
Fruit salad. Yummy, yummy. What I'm saying is, with the bots, right? They'd have pre-programmed bots. You'd have certain celebrities that people would reprogram, right? It'd be...
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So you'd be able to plug into a Pantheon.
Digital version of the sexiest men or women or anywhere in between of history.
Yeah, exactly.
You're exactly right.
Yeah, so someone would program it and you could tap into it.
Yeah. So what you would have is, you'd have a future of no violence, but rampant sexual perversion of deviancy.
Yeah, no one would leave the rooms. You don't have to worry about violence.
Maybe that's a way that's like, instead of religion being the opiate of the masses, it would be like Neuralink sex would be the opiate of the masses.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, secular humanistic dystopia.
Yeah, and I know their internet wasn't there at the time.
Yeah.
Even ironically, I think one of her next films was The Net. But
is that her? Oh, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So with her digital fireplace, but like the internet would be the better way to do it. Like you could be, you know, I'm gonna be in my quarters, be in your quarters. That way, we're not even close to one another. Or
right.
You know, there'd be, why is it stuck to a machine when computers at the time would be way more effective? Maybe that's because we know what. We know now what computers became.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Somebody in 92 when they're, or 91 when they're writing this, or
they have
87 or whatever.
They have video chat. So at least they did. Kind of aware.
They got
of,
Skype right, or yeah. FaceTime right.
Yeah.
Yeah. They talk about laser discs. That was a technology that didn't really take off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Once porn shows DVD, it was over for laser
yeah,
discs.
Yeah. Laser disc is a zoom of.
Now, I do have one question. Okay. Cocteau is only the leader or rebuilder or messianic figure or whatever of San Angeles, right? Or at most California, right? What's the rest of the country look like? There's the big earthquake in 2012. Are we to believe that San Angeles
became an island,
like Escape from LA style? And so it's completely separated from the rest of the country because they never mentioned the larger world.
No.
So is the rest of the world still a cesspool? And this is like the only oasis in a cesspool. Are they aware of the larger world?
Yeah.
They only reference like their zip code.
Are they a sovereign nation to themselves? Or right. Do they still belong to a union?
Right.
Maybe they just, okay, it's going to get too complicated if we get into that. We'll just.
And what's the guy? Yeah, they have police and they have this Cocteau, but he seems to be a like cult sort of sci-fi, science-based cult leader, secular humanist cult leader. Doesn't really seem to be like, he's not like the mayor or the president.
Yeah.
So what is the governmental system of San Angeles?
Well, Dennis Leary's rant kind of spells out that he does control everything.
Yeah, he controls everything, but
I think there's a board because like all those almost looking like the back of an airplane.
So it's basically San Angeles is privately corporation. Owned. Owns
yeah.
that he, metro area.
He might have bought it off of
the state or whatever.
The state, and then kind of cleaned it up and took it for his own.
Right.
But it still belonged to the state.
Right. So what's the rest of California look like?
Yeah.
Or what is the rest
so
of
the world? Or
the rest
the
of the
nation.
World. Yeah, America. They don't ever address that at all.
And maybe that's smart because then you'd be asking why aren't other nations, like if they see all these murder kills or whatever, why aren't they stepping in?
Right.
Right. Because he also says going up all the coastal towns, though.
Yeah. Right.
So obviously there are other coastal towns.
Malibu and Santa Monica and stuff.
Maybe
yeah.
they each have their own corporation that runs them.
Could be.
Because he said we're gonna start here and we're gonna go up. We're gonna go up the coast and we're gonna do what we do best.
Right.
Pillage, murder.
Now does Cocteau run all those cities or does Cocteau just run San Angeles and every major metropolitan area in America is owned by a different corporation, maybe?
I think that's what they're alluding to.
That's an interesting idea. Yeah.
Yeah. That they just privatized civilization.
Yeah. Society. Mm-hmm. Right. That's interesting. We get action set pieces. Obviously, this is an action movie. So if you're going to judge it, probably shouldn't be judging necessarily solely on its world building or its, you know, what kind of reality does it establish. We can look at the set pieces, though. We get the museum. We get the opening one, obviously, which we've already talked about. We have the museum shootout where Phoenix goes for guns. What did you think about the museum? That whole action sequence. Then Spartan shows up, and he gets like the weird magnetic gun, and they end up going into the ruins of old LA. And
I like the scene.
Yeah,
I think it keeps a good pace because if it's just all exposition,
yeah,
then you just lose the audience.
Yeah,
I think they needed that to keep the pace because this movie is largely action expedition. It's an action film. Most of it is.
Right.
But I think it was good.
But every 15, 20 minutes, we have to have an action scene.
What I want to know is how much freaking ammo was in that bag?
Well, I think he just, like, stole all the ammo out of the museum.
Because he's firing shots the rest of the movie.
And then I'm pretty sure that he then arms his goons.
With that same ammo.
Yeah.
And he unloads in other
places. But Edgar Friendly's group had guns and ammo, too, so maybe he bought some down there. Because they're...
Yeah,
the real question is who's manufacturing ammo in 2030,
exactly,
whatever.
Because they said the only place to get it would be...
A museum.
Would be a museum.
Yeah.
Because that's the only place they know of because they have no idea what's going on below.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Because they don't care to look.
So somebody down there is making weapons
ammo. Or they've already stolen weapons, or they found weapons. They procured weapons somehow.
Yeah, right.
Where he just fires a bunch of rounds throughout the entire movie.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, how big is that freaking bag?
Yeah.
It's like a video, it almost turns into a video game.
There's a couple of sequences, including the end, that it felt like an end game boss battle.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get close, but not getting too far ahead of ourselves.
Yeah.
I did like the scene. I think, you know, is that the last time you hear Simon Says?
I'm pretty sure.
Again, it's alluding to you have fire in the beginning, water in the middle, ice at the end.
Yeah, right.
So, because he uses ice, that environmental type of.
He uses the stun baton, and then where the cryo pearl is in a thing that looks like a baton.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, it's the same. And then before, it's the torch.
Right.
So it's like it's a beginning, middle, end. Yeah. So that's I don't know if that's creative or lazy, but it's a theme. And
it's a good follow-through.
It's a good motif and setup and payoff.
I of all the action scenes in the movie, I think the museum one is my favorite one.
Yes. Because
you got the guy that comes up. He's like, what do you weigh? And he chucks him through the window or whatever. And he's like, wait a minute. This is the future. Where are the phaser guns and shit? For some reason that's also a scene. It's a stretch of scenes, but that scene in particular is one where Wesley Snipes is just given a lot of latitude to just
be him,
be crazy. Yeah.
And then the mirror comes down, says, "Sorry for your inconvenience."
Yeah.
And there's a lot of not locked anymore.
Hey, you gotta wait that 15-day waiting period, or can I just like take one now?
Motherfucker! You are mine.
Mellow greetings. What seems to be your boggle?
My boggle? How much do you weigh?
Well, I happen to weigh 50.
Please vacate the museum, patrons. Be calm. Please vacate.
Wait a minute. This is the future. Where are all the phaser guns?
Please vacate the museum.
Fellow greetings, sir.
What's your boggle?
Yeah, I that's probably one of my, if not my favorite, one of my favorites for sure. This next one, the one that happens at Taco Bell, is very meh to me, because it's sort of a bogus action scene. It's been 10-15 minutes since the museum scene. We gotta have a fight, and we gotta get Stallone's character and Dennis Leary's character to see each other, and Stallone has to begin to pick up on the whole scrapper idea and subplot or whatever. And so the plot demands that happen, and so the easiest way to do it is in an action scene, in an action movie, but it's not particularly astounding or well done or well shot, or he's got that terrible line of whatever, you can think about this for the rest of your life till the next two seconds or something.
Yeah.
It's just not good.
Yeah, I think
it wasn't shot well, wasn't choreographed
I think the other thing established was there's a group of people that think they're so far ahead of where Stallone is or his character is, but it ends up showing that they're behind him because they're missing the entire world. Like, he's picking up on things. You know what I mean? So you think I'm a Neanderthal is what you're saying.
Right.
And
you don't see what's going on right in front of you.
Yeah. You don't like the utopia that we've set up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you think I'm the idiot.
Right.
You're the idiot. And so I think that's the other thing that scene really communicates.
And this is a perfect world, but yet you have people who have to steal to have food. So how perfect is the world?
How perfect is this world?
Yeah.
And you can't even see it coming.
Right. We get the sewer shootout, because after this, they end up going down into the sewer. I don't feel like this is anything special either.
No.
This didn't do anything for me. We then get the car chase, which I do think is pretty solid.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good 90s car chase. I mean, I kind of miss the old school style of car chases. By old school, I don't mean like Bullet, but I mean kind of 90s, Lethal Weapon, 80s, 90s. Late night in L.A., for some reason, the streets are always wet. And the cars are always super shiny.
Yeah.
I miss that style of car chase, which I think almost probably peaked with like Terminator 2.
Yeah.
I don't know, probably peaked with Speed, the ultimate car
chase.
Yeah,
probably.
But, after about this point, man, the car chases really weren't that great. I guess you have the one in Ronin. I don't remember if there's a car chase in Heat or not. That's not really what I remember for that movie.
There's one in Bourne, which is later on.
Yeah.
That one goes on way too long.
All that, like, European city, like, Mission Impossible style, like, going around, it doesn't do as much for me.
Yeah, they're too long, and they're kind of disorienting.
Yeah. Yes, right, yeah. I just want, like, obvious stunt performers in two different vehicles.
Doing crazy stuff.
Yeah, doing crazy stuff, yeah. I want like, James Cameron to convince a helicopter pilot to fly an actual helicopter under a bridge. You know, dangerously fly a helicopter under a bridge because the only way you can do it is if somebody really does it.
Yeah.
I just want stunt performers to risk their actual life for my entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't care about your life. I care about my entertainment.
Because CGI it doesn't hit the same. We do get the cryo final battle. This is the most video game style fight and also most Batman Forever-ish sort of fight. It's very much like the most Batman versus like a weird Simon Says villain kind of a thing.
Yeah, it's almost like you have to climb the tower to get to the top.
Yeah.
It's very video game like.
Well, yeah, because he's got all the underlings, whatever he's got to fight off first.
Yeah. And he gets there, and then there's the...
He's got the big claw, and he's picking him up and moving him around. Then he's got the laser. Because all of those, like, Super Nintendo boss fights, like, the boss had the first mode, which was kind of easy. You kind of punch him or whatever, then he climbs in a giant machine, and then he's using a giant machine to try to kill you, and then you destroy the machine, and then he's got a big laser, you know, and then you defeat the laser, and then, you know, there's those, then you gotta go fight him again hand-to-hand. There's usually like four or five, like a Castlevania or something.
Where yeah.
You have to fight Dracula like five different ways before you can kill him, right?
Yeah.
That's what it felt like.
Yeah, it very much felt like a video game. Yeah.
And you know, he's just like yelling out quips and, you know, it was that's a very 90s kind of motif.
It was.
It's okay. This is obviously, this fight scene was infamous, as you brought up, or famous. This was like, everybody, you got to see this, man. And of course, I'm talking about what?
The scene where they're in the cryogenic chamber. It fills up with the, I want to say it was liquid nitrogen.
Yeah.
Or whatever they're using.
Yeah.
He freezes him. He grabs on to the rope or whatever is going around.
The claw, yeah.
Into his frozen head. So he's already dead.
Yes.
If he freezes his head.
Freezes his whole body, yeah.
Whole body. I mean, yeah, you've been frozen. I guess you can make the argument they're frozen before so we can get back.
Not like this, though.
But not like this.
No.
Yeah, he's dead.
Yeah.
And he goes and repeats, what's that famous line?
Heads up.
Heads up.
Yeah.
Boom, and he hits.
He said, I would lose my head if it wasn't attached.
Yep.
Yeah. That's the payoff. Setup, yeah. Payoff. And he knocks his head off, and then his head explodes. Right?
Yeah, and every kid in 93, every boy in 93 was losing their mind.
Because somebody saw Terminator 2 in 91 and was like, I got to one-up that.
Yeah.
Right? Because the T-1000 gets in the liquid nitrogen, freezes, and his legs break off, and his arm breaks off, he falls apart, which was like the most, because that's the Hasta La Vista scene. So it was like the most badass part of that movie. Like when you were a kid, that's the thing you remember from that movie. That and him standing with a giant minigun just out a window. That's what you knew about that movie. So in 93, if you're a kid and they're like, we're going to do that. Only the thing is, Hasta La Vista was a much better quip and a much better setup and payoff in that movie. Damn. And it was just so bad. It was so badass in 91 when you were a kid for Schwarzenegger at the height of his powers to be sitting there all banged up or whatever with the 9mm and just be like, Hasta La Vista, baby, and then just explode the guy. And it was done practically, and so it was like something we'd never seen anything like that before.
Yeah.
It was in a movie that was already mind-blowing. This was a mind-blowing, almost the crescendo. Somebody saw that movie and was like, well, I want to do something. I want to take that to the next level. What if he, like, knocked the guy's head off? I don't think anybody was going around being like, heads up, you know?
Yeah. You already say heads up.
That's a good point.
Right?
Right.
So it's not like it created anything in our culture.
No. Well, I don't think Demolition Man in 93 created anything in our culture other than Taco Bell tie-in cups.
Yeah.
A bunch of garbage for landfills, I think is what it created.
Yeah. Well, the three shells lasted, the tickets lasted.
Yeah.
And there's a couple things that lasted.
But that's almost like more of a resurgence, though.
Yeah, that's true.
I feel like that came back. I feel like in 2005 or 2010... It came back, and we were like, oh, yeah, I remember that weird-ass movie,
yeah,
right?
With meme culture. Other than that, it was some random crap you'd say to a friend at a party.
Right.
Hey, check the three shells or something like that. You know what I mean? Or it'd be some kind
of... It's almost like an inside joke.
Yeah. It was a weird, hey, remember that strange movie back in the day? It'd be almost like a recall to nostalgia.
Yeah.
That would seem random.
Right.
And now, because of meme culture...
Which is just nothing but nostalgia references.
Exactly.
Yeah, nostalgia play. Yeah. I thought we would do that here on this show. Never.
Never.
What are the politics of this movie? We kind of touched on this already. Because this movie is... setting up the idea that this 2032 is as presented as this horrible, horrible dystopia. And obviously they have some socioeconomic problems. But what I would say is it's a damn sight better than 2020's going so far. Like, it was like, if this is where we're going to be in 12 years, where is Cocktail? Sign me up now. You can put me on ice for the next 12 years.
Cocktail 2020, baby.
Yeah. Him and associate Bob is VP.
Yeah, I'm good.
We
go with Theo.
If
his sandal and sock wearing ass up.
That's exactly right. I don't care how many kimonos, different kimonos these guys are wearing.
What's your platform? We're good.
Yeah. Empty boxes of PPE, empty boxes of Taco Bell. I don't give a shit.
Make sure you film it.
That's exactly right. I would vote for a Cocktail Bob platform today.
I'm with you.
Right?
I'm with you.
He's rid the world of pain and suffering, violence, and disease.
That's right.
And people have joy feelings. There's ATMs that make you feel good about yourself, which is, you know, social media has made us all narcissists. So
that's true.
So all we need is ATMs just being like, you're a good-looking guy who gives others joy feelings. I want somebody to tell me I give them joy feelings.
They found a way to continue to hook up with random people at a six-foot distance.
Social distancing sex.
Yeah, social distancing sex. So they had the curve there.
Correct.
They've handled the problem of restaurants probably closing all over the place.
Because every restaurant's Taco Bell,
so you don't have to worry about it.
And even though there was a sit-down restaurant, he had a van, and it was called, like, the Food Valet or whatever.
There it is.
So that's Instacart, or that's Grubhub. That's DoorDash.
They're ahead of time.
They were ahead, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they basically had Snapchat, except it was a whole, whole TV. With a flash to that 20-year-old getting the wrong number.
Yep.
Yeah, so they're just ahead of their time. I mean, I think that we
if
can...
If I had to live in San Angeles right now, and the worst thing that could happen to me is they call the police because I swear, I would clear up my language tomorrow.
You're goddamn right, I would.
I would!
Yeah, absolutely.
I'd never swear again. You want me to eat broccoli shakes and, what am I missing out on? Waffle House? For real, like, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sign me up.
What was Cocteau's crime? Taking away Playboy? Playboy doesn't even exist in 2020.
That's true.
I don't need the internet. I really don't need the internet.
You don't need the internet if you can have sex with somebody just by plugging in your machine. Or you don't need pornography if you can.
So I don't need the internet. You don't need the internet.
Well, you need it to connect to the person that you're going to have sex with through the machine.
Not if I could be in the same room with them, or if it's a bot. That's
true. Or just send me a box.
Yeah. We don't know the distance on those things, or range on those things. Maybe they're
Bluetooth technology.
Maybe San Angeles is just one giant Bluetooth hotspot. You can just connect to different things. It's just one giant
5G spot.
If you had to sentence me to 12 years in cryostasis. And my punishment was the day I got out, I'd be living in a clean, environmentally conscious, climate change-free, virus-free, polite society where I get to have digital sex with Sandra Bullock on my first day. Put me in the ice yesterday.
Yeah, but you don't have any freedom. You win some, you lose some.
What freedom do I have? To die for capitalism?
We each have our hills.
Yeah. Everybody's got their cross to bear. That's a sacrifice they're willing to make at the Not Walt Disney Corporation. As we finish this podcast, the three shells most likely are used for a scooping mechanism, I would assume.
Maybe it was just like, there's no way for us to think of how it would work. So,
but okay, let's say I go in after eating Taco Bell, make a horrible mess, right?
Yeah.
I'm vegan. A lot of fiber, right?
Yeah.
Not a lot of binding necessary. A lot of stuff, a lot of psyllium husk kind of sort of stuff, just cleaning out the ridges, right?
Yeah.
pushing it out. So pushing out some
like
toxins.
I think it's like a lapping mechanism. Yeah. You're splashing it.
A homemade bidet kind of a thing?
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Why do I need to see shows when bidets exist?
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Okay. But assuming in this world, because this is 93 America when we didn't believe in bidets, let's assume that bidets don't exist in Cocteau's plan.
Yeah.
I have a horrible vegan cleanse detox bowel movement. Destroy the toilet. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm a mess. I'm a mess back there. I use the three seashells in whatever way they're prescribed to be used. How are they sanitized for the next person?
Is there like, do they replace them or do they just put them back on the shelf?
It just looked like they were sitting on the shelf. Would you want to put seashells that have been somebody else's ass in your ass?
Again.
Would you want to put seashells that have been in your ass back in your ass at a later date and time? I wouldn't even want to do that.
No, I wouldn't even go that far. No. I'd have to say.
And what's more plentiful, seashells or trees? I'm not. I agree. Yeah. Wadding up paper and shoving it up your bunghole, not exactly the most civilized thing.
Will this be a hence reason for bidets. You not to go on ice?
It's not enough.
It's not enough.
The
but it's close.
It's close. If anybody knows me knows I got yeah. a lot of weird things with germs and so forth. What I'm saying is, if at the end of the day, at the end of my first day awake in the future, Sandra Bullock, 93 Sandra Bullock is waiting for me.
Here's my other question.
I will cram any seashell. I would put a live lobster up the poop chute and let it do its business.
Yeah. If everything's digitalized,
yeah.
Why are the tickets printing out at random spots? If they can recognize the name and everyone's
got a code.
Why not just send to the code digitally?
Yeah, just find their account or
whatever. Yeah, because what's worse, people swearing or people using
paper? Right. Is it maybe more of a public shaming thing?
Maybe, but they've just announced their name.
You know, there's a fine associated with it, but maybe it's the idea of this moral code is so strict and everybody complies with it that if you're the outlier, now you're shamed by this.
But if not taking care of the environment is a issue of morality, then wouldn't they be breaking their own morality by making them print out the ticket?
Society is always full of double standards between the people who have power and the people who don't.
Really? Since when?
Yeah, I mean, that's literally the kind of the whole thesis of this movie, right? Yeah, is Cocteau's a hypocrite.
Yeah. Right? Touché. Well played. Yeah, that makes
it's
sense.
It's not a perfect, there is no perfect society. It's just we come up with these bullshit societies
that
say they're perfect.
I've got plans.
I'm sure you do. Well, if you had to give this movie a score out of 10, what would you give it in 2020 or whatever year this is that we're in?
I would give
this nightmare that we are living through.
See, I still enjoy the movie because it's not one that I'm going to reflect on. It's not going to like change how I view the world or create a conversation with somebody.
I would even make the argument it shouldn't.
It shouldn't.
That the politics of this movie may be abhorrent.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, if you come away with it,
if your ideology
my
is...
eyes have been opened.
I see the truth, brother.
I see it now. Oh God.
I've been red pilled, bro.
I've been red pilled, bro. You have no understanding. Let me open your eyes.
It's called monkey branching, bro.
Yeah. You want epiphany? Listen to me. I got
a YouTube video you gotta check out, man.
YouTube video and a Crunch Wrap Supreme. But I liked it. I like it as I just let me sit down, let me watch it, let me just relax. It's been a stressful day at work. Let me throw this on so I can just kind of veg out and just enjoy a movie. That's because it's enjoyable, but it's not really a game changer. I give it a 6.4.
6.4 out of 10. I'm going to go a little bit higher than you. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10. Okay. In my mind, this is the most recently I watched a movie. One of my most recent reviews I did by myself was for a movie that came out in 2020 called Underwater. It's a terrible film. And I said, I like 7.0 movies. I don't need everything to be an 8 or a 9 or 10. Sometimes you don't want that, right? Sometimes it's a Tuesday, Thursday night, sometimes even a Friday night. The week has been stressful, and you just want to sit there with your significant other, or partner, or whatever, or your friend on Zoom or Duo or whatever.
Yeah.
And you just want to escape. I like art house cinema. Fine, it's great. You know, we do a lot of reviews for those sort of movies on the show as part of our instant reactions. But man, sometimes I just don't want to watch her You know, I don't need to watch a marriage story. I lived a marriage story.
Yeah, that film was about me by an actor that looks like me. I'm close enough.
Yeah, that's a little too close to home. Yeah.
Nailed
Wait a minute, Noah Baumbach. Is this based on your life?
Son of a
or
bitch.
Mine? Right?
Yeah.
So what's my alternative? My alternative is Deep Rising or Demolition Man,
yeah,
or whatever. Something that I've seen before, something as I know. It's that the bologna sandwich theory. I don't even eat bologna, but it's sometimes you want a grilled cheese sandwich. Is it food? Kind of. It's a slice of American cheese. Is it cheese? Close
kind
enough.
Kind of.
Yeah, close enough.
Enough properties to say it is.
Is this a movie? Close enough.
Yeah, because sometimes you just want a film that keeps your attention but doesn't activate the mind.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it.
And that, to me, this is a good film for that.
Sometimes I don't want to feel anything.
Most of the time, I don't want to feel.
I don't want to feel a damn thing.
And this is a lot more healthy than drinking it away.
Yeah, as I finish my Tito's.
Cheers.
And that is our review, our bonus review, chosen by you, the listeners, for 1983's Demolition Man. Do yourself a favor, if you haven't already, go on Twitter and follow us at Pat and Jason. One of these days, Pat shall make his triumphant return. And until then, we can keep doing some reviews. We'll probably do another listener lockdown challenge poll. We'll let you vote. We'll probably do about one more of these. And depending on how things go, maybe four or five more of these in the next couple of months. Depending on how things shake out here in the not too distant future. In one or two different situations. So, yeah. So until next time, be well.
See ya.
No, you weren't here when the real disturbances began. Civilization tried to destroy itself. The city degenerated into a total fear zone. The citizenry cocooning in their homes, afraid to go out. People just wanted the madness over. So when I saw the chance to make things right, I seized it. If I had not, the radiance of San Angeles would not be here. Just your rotting cesspool of hate and suffering. Which would you prefer?